on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 91-year-old Helen Kearney of Salinas, California, originally from the small town of Clarinda, Iowa. Of the more than 16 million Americans who put on a uniform during World War II, only 59,000 of them were Army nurses, and we're getting to know one. We might bounce around a little bit chronologically here, but Helen arrived at Saipan not long before the Japanese surrendered, working there with the 39th General Hospital. It had been constructed and staffed in anticipation of the planned invasion of Japan. Maybe you've heard on this program before that projected American casualties from such an invasion were estimated at more than 1 million. So they would have needed a whole lot of places to take those wounded, and Saipan was to be one of them. You heard Helen describe the kind of patients that she had there in the waning days of World War II, but let's explore a little more of the life she had there. I have to imagine, Helen, that there were a lot more men on Saipan than there were women, right?
Oh, yes. There were 100,000 men on the island and less than 100 of us. So that was a pretty good ratio if you're a woman, you know.
1,000 guys for every girl.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you had some pretty good odds of meeting someone special there, and I'm pretty sure you did, but the way it all unfolded was pretty unique. You talk about timing as everything. Is it true that somebody had to get a little tipsy and fall off a porch in order to make it possible for you to meet your husband?
Well, yes. One of my patients was a dentist, and he fell off the officers' club porch and broke his leg, and he was my patient. And his roommate came to visit him, and that roommate turned out to be my husband.
But I'm sure you didn't know in that moment that he was going to be your husband, right?
Oh, no. I was dating a 6'2" redheaded Marine that was quite handsome.
And had a great nickname, too, didn't he?
Yes, they called him Pinky.
So this Bill Kearney fellow must have done something pretty special to convince you that he was more worthy than Pinky.
Oh, of course. Of course, as I got to know him, he swept me off my feet, let me put it that way.
By taking you to boxing matches?
Oh, yes. I was dating a B-29 pilot, and he had just flown home, and I came back to the Quonset hut, and the phone rang, and it was my husband asking me if I'd like to go to a boxing match because he was the athletic director of the Marianas Islands, and that's really all he had to offer. And I'd never been to one, so I thought, well, I'm not busy, why not? And the next morning in the small island newspaper, the headlines read, 20,000 men and one girl at boxing match. I was the only woman there. And fortunately, I happened to have a picture someone had taken of the audience there. And my husband, or future husband, had arranged to make sure that I was safe. He had me surrounded by MPs at the event.
And that's a great photo. I'll make sure I put that up on hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. The battle had been over at Saipan, and then you stayed there after the war was over as well, so people might think, well, there's nothing too dangerous going on there. But there were some moments that made you a little nervous, and I understand there was one incident where you couldn't figure out why these Japanese folks were trying to get your attention?
Well, there were three Japanese soldiers that had been hiding out after the war was over. And they decided to surrender, and they stood by the road waving a white flag all day trying to surrender. Nobody paid any attention to them. Finally, someone did and took them in, but it was kind of funny.
And maybe these were the same Japanese you heard laughing in the woods? Let's get that story. While you were there on Saipan, it wasn't just boxing matches. You had other sources of entertainment. You actually had your own little movie theater?
Yes, we did. The Seabees were just wonderful. They had built this theater, and the projection booth was right on a level with the ward where this man who had broken his back was staying. There were some Japanese running around in the foliage, and they used to climb the palm trees and watch the movies. And when they had a slapstick comedy, then you could hear them break out laughing because they understood that, you know. They might not know English, but they got a big kick out of that. And then this other person, I had gone out with him on one date, and they came and woke me up and said he had been in a Jeep accident, and he was in emergency, and he was asking for me. So I got up and went over there, and much to my amazement, he had broken his back. And the doctors, being very ingenious, had thrown a rope over a rafter and had tied his feet up with the rope, and he was dangling there upside down with nothing on except a little towel between his legs. He just acted so calm, and he acted like this was the most normal thing in the world for him to be visiting with me. And then they were doing that to expand. They didn't have any fancy equipment, of course, to expand his spinal cord so they could put a cast on it and give it a chance to heal. And so the ward where he was put was just right next to where I was in charge. And so I would stop by and visit him a lot. One day it occurred to me that his ward was just about 15 or 20 feet away from the projection booth, and that I could take a wheelchair and put up the foot of it and let down the head, put him on his stomach, and wheel him over, and he could watch a movie. And so that evening when it got dark, I went back and got him all set up. And then he kind of beckoned to me. You know, he said, wanted to talk to me. And he was lying on his stomach so he could look out and see the movie. So he tried to kiss me, and I got tickled. I thought, well, I guess it takes more than a full body cast to keep some of these guys down, you know.
There's a postscript to that story too, right?
Oh, yes. Years later, my mother got a phone call, and this man said that you have a daughter named Helen, and she said yes, and was she on Saipan? Yes. He said, you know, I will never forget her as long as I live. He said, I broke my back, and she took care of me when I was there, and I'll just never forget her. And my mother, who was so romantic, said, woo! And he wanted to know what had happened to me. So she said I was married out and was out here and had two children.
Yeah, Bill Kearney beat him to the punch. Let's talk more about Bill. We heard how the timing had to work out for the two of you to meet. That was pretty incredible. And as you spent more and more time together, I'm curious, did he ever share with you any of the things that he'd seen and experienced during this war in the Pacific?
Actually, he was assigned to the hospital down in New Zealand, so it was more or less routine. However, he was invited to fly up to Iwo Jima one day, and he wasn't going to go, but I encouraged him to in a small airplane. So anyway, they got up there, and he said he'd never seen so many ships in his life getting ready for the invasion, and he went inside of Mount Suribachi. It had all been hollowed out. They had a hospital in there and sleeping quarters for the Japanese men, and he was quite amazed at what he had seen. He was very glad he had gone.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions here, but I get the sense from your stories that you had plenty of suitors over there on Saipan and plenty of guys that wanted to hang out with a nurse. What was it about Bill that set him apart and made you decide, yeah, this is the guy?
First of all, he was charming and a real gentleman. And also, if he said he would do something, he did it. He was responsible. And that was very important to me. Other people would promise this, promise that, but they wouldn't do it.
What would you say was the most rewarding part of your work as a nurse?
Well, just answering the need of any patient for whatever reason. It's very rewarding work. It's also very demanding, but it's very rewarding.
What else did you do with all your time on Saipan? You've got a great scrapbook here. You might need some duct tape to hold it together because it's been around a while, but you've got terrific photos from your time over there. It looks like you stayed pretty active. You're singing in the church choir, but that doesn't quite look like most of the churches we see around here.
No, it was a Quonset hut, but they had made the windows into a triangular shape and put some kind of colored paper over sections of it to make it look like stained glass. And it did give the impression of being in a church. It was very nice.
And you guys had your own private beach, too?
Yes, we did. By then, you see, the Seabees had time to build a theater, an outdoor theater, and a kind of a bungalow with a thatched roof and a beach for just the nurses. It was nice.
I know you had a lot of adventures out there, and I can tell just from your scrapbook of hanging out on the beach or singing the Messiah on Saipan with these other folks in choir robes. There are a lot of bathing suit photos in there. You going to boxing matches and basketball games. But what were the more somber aspects of your duties there? And were there days where what you were doing and how far you were away from home and your reality weighed on you a little bit?
No, practically never.
Really?
I do remember on one Christmas Eve, I went to my room and opened up a present all by myself in the room. And I really miss my family. But other than that, and then a friend of mine passed away, And she became very ill and passed away. They couldn't save her. And that was distressing because she was a lovely person. But no, actually, it was almost all very upbeat.
And you spent a month on Guam, too? You got to escape Saipan and taste another island out there in the Pacific?
Yes, but it was almost identical in nature. You know, the foliage was the same. And, you know, you do your job. You're there for the job. You follow the doctor's orders and see that they're carried out. And nursing is nursing, no matter where you are. It's the same every place.
What was your favorite part of being a nurse, besides just wearing the uniform? I mean, that had to be a big part of it, right?
Well, I never thought of it that way. Except caps. We used to wear white caps. And we're pretty much, once we were capped, that was a ceremony. And to me, that was really neat to have that cap. You kind of think that you're an angel of mercy to try to, you know, relieve people of pain and do what you can to help.
You have a story about getting pressed into some special duty when President Roosevelt passed away. And I know we're bouncing around chronologically here, but tell me what that was.
Well, when I was at Fort Cook, just outside of Omaha at a station hospital, President Roosevelt passed away, and the chief nurse came to me and asked me if I would serve in the honor guard for him, and so I did. And I marched down the aisle, I can remember that, with a Navy man, Marine, and a Coast Guard. And my parents lived 80 miles away in Iowa, but they drove over to see me do that because they were so pleased. And I didn't really think of it at the time, but I was representing the Army from that whole area. It was quite an honor. I just didn't realize it, frankly, at the time, but as I look back on it, it was. When you're young, you don't appreciate some things that you do later.
And I'm sure there are a lot of those things when it comes to World War II and all the years that have passed since. When you got to Saipan, though, when you first got there, you were warned about safety. Another nurse had just been taken and buried alive. So there was some danger in being a woman on this island. And it wasn't always necessarily the enemy either. Some Americans had some bad ideas, too. Tell me about this incident where you had reason to be concerned.
We were riding along when an Army truck forced us off the road, and three or four men got out of the truck because they had seen women in the Jeep. And they came towards the Jeep, and fortunately my date was a B-29 pilot who was very competent. And in the meantime, as they approached, I noticed both the men in the Jeep had taken their guns out of their holsters and kept them out of sight, but they were prepared to shoot if necessary. And my date ordered them back into their truck in no uncertain terms. And they stood there for a minute, and then finally they lumbered off. It was quite a relief.
Certainly. So few of us know what it's like outside of our comfortable existence. And a lot of us have never lived in a war zone like you did. And Jeeps weren't the only thing that you took rides in. Before the Japanese surrendered, you actually got to take off from Saipan in one of those PBY Catalina flying boats?
Yes, well, we flew over Tinian, which was 2 miles away. And the northern end of the island had been cordoned off for the B-29 airstrip. But we flew over the rest of the island, and the Japanese there still had their guns and ammunition, and they were shooting at us. And the pilot said, "I can't go any lower, they might hit us." So that was an interesting experience, too.
And that B-29 airstrip you mentioned is the one that the Enola Gay took off from to drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. So you had history all around you out there in the Pacific. Again, I'm not trying to make it sound crazy here, but another one of the gentlemen that you went out with at one point was in the submarines, and you got to eat dinner on a World War II diesel submarine. That must have smelled nice.
I don't remember the smell. I do remember the name. It was called the Gar. They were all named after fish. We had to climb down a ladder, the hook to the wall, and then walk around some of the big torpedoes, which were huge. I just somehow never realized how big they were and had dinner there. It was a wonderful experience. Also had dinner on an aircraft carrier. And then another time when my date took me out sailing and couldn't get met back to shore, he flagged down a captain's gig and said, "Is your captain so-and-so?" And he said, "Yes." So he had him tow us to his ship. And we had to climb up a landing net and with 300 sailors watching us, you know. And we got to the captain's office. And, of course, he and my Ken said to him that he had been one of his instructors in submarine school. And, of course, the captain wondered what we were doing there, and I was, too. I didn't know what we were doing there. And finally, after a little chit-chat, Ken said, well, could your gig tow us back to shore? And that's how he got us back. It was really funny. I thought, well, he got us back. That was the important thing. But I thought it was terribly funny. I was trying to keep a straight face the whole time.
The dating adventures of an Army nurse on Saipan. Well, at least we all know how it all worked out. And we'll make a few more connections when we come back. 91-year-old Helen Kearney of Salinas, California is our guest. You'll find some photos from her time in the Pacific and what she looks like now on hometownheroesradio.com or, of course, the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll have the rest of Helen's story when Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch right after this.